Dear God, on this Remembrance Sunday and beyond, make us agents working for you, bringing peace to earth. Amen. Friends, today we live in a time of corrosive fear, where wars and rumors of war can eat away at our contentment and serenity, can even stir up our deepest anxieties. Of course, for so many, it is much worse. Our new Syrian friends, the Myanmar Rohingya, the Iraqi Yazidis, indeed, migrants on the move across the globe can all tell tales of what Robbie Burns once called man's inhumanity to man that makes countless thousands mourn. Yet how often during the last century have we or our ancestors lived under a similar cloud? Many of you will know the William Butler Yeats poem, The Second Coming. Written at the close of the First World War, the so-called war to end all wars? Did he express joy or even optimism now that the Great War was over? Instead, he began like this, turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart. The center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood-dimmed tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lose all conviction, while the worst are filled with passionate intensity. No surprise that people around the globe are reading and rereading this poem today to help grasp a world shaped by Trump, Putin, Assad, by Brexit, by the crumbling of international treaties seemingly before our eyes, while confidence in our social or political institutions seems to falter. Even from the vantage point of this fortunate land called Canada, we wonder, will the center hold? Can the center hold while the worst of the world's leaders are filled with passionate intensity? It is in this time of heightened concern we come to Remembrance Day and now to Remembrance Sunday, which with every passing year evoke more questions. In this congregation, we have members whose bravery and sacrifice kept our country safe from harm. But for the rest of us, how do we remember that which fewer and fewer of us ever personally experienced? What does remembrance truly mean in 2017? How do we make it more than a moment's pause in our busy lives, an annual burst of piety leading to little change? Our website here at Fairlawn states that we connect to what matters in life. But why does it matter that we remember? What good does it do? What good can we do? I strongly believe there are powerful answers to all these questions of value to us individually, to our families, and to this community. Indeed, the seeds of those answers are already being sown here if we can only see them for what they are and nurture them to full maturity. For me, those answers come in the form of three principles that I will share with you to take away, and I hope for you to draw sustenance from in the coming days and weeks. But first we need to unpack our emotions about war, peace, and sacrifice a little further. Today, many of us share painfully mixed feelings of both reverence and sadness. When we think of the wars in which Canada has fought, or in the words of the writer, for weep for the dead, Our feelings invoke both our senses of horror and renown. We also know that few Canadians today could conceive of a war as any solution, or could believe that a war today could be winnable in any sense we could imagine. Most of us who grew up in the Vietnam era came to doubt how any future war could be redeemable. We sang along with the Temptations, "War, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Say it again." Today, we honor the dead and our living veterans for the sacrifices they and their families made in what most Canadians believed were just wars, justified for their capacity to avert a much greater evil. Today, we also pray for peace, lasting peace, the deep peace that can seep into our bones, grant us freedom from fear, and allow us to hope for our children's, grandchildren's, and great-grandchildren's future. These seemingly conflicting emotions are not opposites, not in competition with each other, but are closely tied, informed by and bound up with each other, two sides of the same coin. Many families present here today have their own special stories of both horror and renown, of heroism and mortal loss, of those at the front and of those who waited with anguished breath for news from the front. It is surely mixed emotions that we feel as we both venerate all who sacrificed and as we long for the day that Carissa read to us, the day when nations will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks, when nation will not take up sword against nation, neither will they train for war anymore. What a beautiful vision Isaiah expressed. What an inspiring goal to bend all our efforts towards. Yet how is it that we seem to get no nearer to that dream of peace on earth? For us who follow the Prince of Peace, how is it that we have not brought his reign of peace any nearer? To envision a more hopeful way forward, consider the poem of W.H. Auden, honoring the death and life of John F. Kennedy. Listen again for the two sides of the coin as he writes, "When a just man dies, lamentation and praise, sorrow and joy are one." Why then, why there, why thus, we cry, did he die? The heavens are silent. What he was, he was. What he is fated to become depends on us. Remembering his life, how we choose to live will decide its meaning. And so here it is, we find the first core principle on which we can build. To Auden, remembering must be much more than a passive recalling of what happened or of what it meant back then. Remembering must become an action verb, a conscious choice to become peacemakers in every way we know how. As we will shortly sing, "God, though peace be our ambition, we must reach a firm decision. Make us grasp your great commission to bring peace to earth." Thus, as we remember our soldiers' lives and the lives of all the others who paid the price for war, how we choose to live will decide their meaning. So in summary, our first principle, to remember actively, choosing to make peace. What peacemaking actions can we as individuals and as this church be making? Our second principle, with deep significance for everyone here and everyone on this planet, is that we must be fully, wholeheartedly, utterly connected by love. Well, that's a happy coincidence, you must be thinking. Isn't that our core belief, describing how we wish to live here at Fairlawn? Is that really an answer for world peace? Yes, deep in my heart, I do believe that our quest for peace must begin here, in each of our hearts. You see, we live in a world where many forces are at work to divide us, to widen our fault lines, to spark our anger at those who think or pray differently than we do, who look different from us, or whose choices we do not support. When we disagree with someone's views, we too often attack the person. Outrage and demonizing others far too rapidly become our default style. As creatures of our wider society, none of us is immune from this demeaning incivility. Speaking of myself, guilty as charged. Instead, starting with this congregation and radiating outwards, we must become a shining example of being connected by love, not just passively, not just as an attitude, but by love as an action verb. That is also what we mean when we say here that one of our three purposes at Fairlawn is to embrace action. Can you think of any more action-oriented verb than embrace? Or a word that better reflects what it can mean to be connected by love? And what were those seeds I spoke about? A quick list includes CRC for 40 Oaks, prayer shawls, Boarding Homes Ministry, Camp Scugog, walk-in support, encircling a mosque with love when our Muslim friends felt under attack, the reconciliation canoe trip, as well as many daily acts of love and kindness between members of this community. Are these green shoots enough? Rather, they are just the beginning. But if we choose to build upon these seedling examples and continue turning Fairlawn into a place where every day we strive to live and model connected by love, both inside this place and in our wider community, we will be amazed by the outcome. So in summary, our second principle, to connect with each other by love, then share it widely. But even if we take that lead and others follow, we know that that will not suffice. A singular risk of this era is the chipping away at our belief in our economic, political, and social institutions intended to unify, serve, or protect us. Do you recall those people that Yeats wrote about who are so filled with passionate intensity? One thing they all do is undermine our faith in governments, the media, our society, and economy, often as reasons that we should panic and throw in our lot with their authoritarian ways. The stories of 1930s Germany, and more lately of Bosnia, Myanmar, Rwanda, have been about ruthless leaders turning different peoples against each other, stoking fears of economic and social collapse, and then seizing control. Not yet in Canada, true, agreed, but can we be complacent? Thus, our third priority as a church community is to strengthen and then support the civic institutions that unite us in common cause, or could, once we reform them. What seedlings have we sown here in Fairlawn? Our recent pray-in for poverty reduction at the mayor's office was no attempt to undermine that office. Rather, that multi-faith initiative shows that by insisting on high expectations for those who govern us, we will not rest until they live up to their own stated ideals. At the same time, we also demonstrated that members of the great religions have so much in common and can mobilize to be a source of concord, not of discord. A second example. A few years ago, most of us knew little about Syria. Most could just about locate it on a map. Meanwhile, Ottawa initially reacted to the refugee crisis there with timidity, limited resources, and even less enthusiasm. In 3 short years, we have dived happily into a relationship with some wonderful Syrian newcomers. We are about to welcome our next Syrian family. We've met up with many more at the recent Al-Sadaqa dinner, and we have learned greatly about the experiences they have shared with us, about what it means to be a refugee. Someone on the run, a stranger in a strange land. About our own country, its strengths and its failings that we see more clearly through their eyes. Most of all, about our seeking to offer an experience of belonging, only to have our own experience of belonging enriched by our new friends. But more, we have joined a much larger group of engaged Canadians in a nationwide movement. Our rivulet has now become part of a mighty stream, and even as we have gained insight from our work here, so have we tried to share it with others who wish to do their part. And by contrast with those who would divide the Arab and the Anglo-Saxon, the Muslim and the Christian, the most recent immigrant from those who came in earlier waves, we try to live and learn and love a better way to be. Again, these seeds are just a start, but we must commit to building up civil society, not tearing it down, expecting the most from our leaders, not assuming the worst, working in common cause with other faiths, not staying in separate enclaves, reaching across artificial boundaries that diminish our shared humanity, not building walls. So, in summary, our third principle, to strengthen our communal ties that bind. Here at Fairlawn, we dare to use the word call to describe our love affair with God's world and our mandate from God. What does God call us to do here at Fairlawn to bring peace to earth? To remember actively, choosing to make peace, to connect with each other by love, then share it widely, to strengthen our communal ties that bind. God grant us the strength to make it so. Shalom, salam, may the peace of God be with us all. Amen.